benzene. The orders also end an Obama-era moratorium of coal leasing on federal lands. Sierra Club executive director Ben Jealous blasted the order, saying that coal kills. In the last two decades, 500,000 Americans have died from exposure to coal pollution. Donald Trump's plan is as despicable as it is reckless and ill-conceived. The World Meteorological Organization has a new report out finding March was another record-breaking month in Europe. Claire Noah's spokesperson for the WMO spoke in Geneva.
March was the warmest March on record for Europe. Globally, it was the second warmest behind March 2024.
Record heat has also been recorded over the United States, Mexico, parts of Asia, and Australia. The burning of fossil fuels is the main contributor to global warming. I'm Christina Onnestad reporting for Pacifica.
I'm Luisa Montali, host of Africa Now, and you're tuned to member-supported WPFW Washington. Welcome to Africa Now. Today's show features poetry's tradition in action in challenging times. Africa Now is next. Welcome to the show. I'm Wiza Muntali. The music in the background is Marrakesh Blues by Randy Weston, and we play that remembering his birthday, which is April 6th, and commemorating Jazz Appreciation Month. April is also National Poetry Month. Thus today, the show features a conversation with Zain El Amin, who, as you might know, is the host and producer of Shawanana, which airs here on WPFW after Africa Now at 2 p.m. Zain El Amin is a poet, spoken word artist, writer, and adjunct professor at American University. The conversation reflects on the role and tradition of a poet or spoken word artist in speaking truth to power, Zain's influences, and more. Here is the recent conversation I had with Zain El Amin, looking at poetry's tradition in action in challenging times. Zain El Amin, welcome to our show.
Thank you, Moisa. Thank you for having me.
And thanks for being on. And this has been a minute since we've been on the same show together. We follow each other.
That's right. And thank you for also always advertising the Shawanana show, always right when it starts, sending out a message to people to give them heads up that it's on.
No problem. And just a FYI for those who are new to the show, Zain El Amin is the host and producer of the Shawanana show, which is right after Africa Now on WPFW. And that's at his show is at 2 o'clock. Of course, Africa Now is on at 1 o'clock. And I hope you listen to that show, which covers the news and culture of Northern Africa and the Middle East, generally what is called the Arab world, and giving a more perspective, thoughtful, nuanced perspective of the region and the peoples. And today we're going to turn the tables on Zain. instead of him being the host and interviewer, he is going to be the interviewee. We're going to first ask Zain, basically, who is Zain El Amin?
Well, I was born and raised in Lebanon, and I grew up both in Lebanon, later moved to live in Saudi Arabia for a length of time because my father worked there. And then I didn't move to the United States. I've lived in Bahrain went for boarding school there for high school. And then for college, I went back to Saudi Arabia and studied civil engineering, or rather forced to do it by my father. You know the story, Luisa, with traditional fathers. But anyway, I really wanted to be I was more interested in literature and, interested in writing and teaching rather, more importantly, at that age, you really don't know how to defend what you want to do. So I just let my father force me into these things. But nonetheless, in 1987, I moved here, and after my getting my engineering degree, worked in the field for a few days, for a few years rather, before getting an actual engineering job. And then I had a successful engineering career of 20 years, including building the National Airport and Dulles Airport. National Airport, the new terminal that you see, the canary yellow airport that you fly out of. We built that. 25 of us project managers worked on it from ground up, and then went to Dulles Airport, where I worked on the underground transportation system and other on the midfield terminal B. And then I changed careers in 2007. I was enrolled. I went to the head of the English department, and actually, on Wednesday, on the day of this broadcast, basically, I'll be returning to my alma mater, the University of Maryland, to read for the students and to meet MFA students there. You could say they're celebrating my work, which is a collection of short stories titled "Is This How You Eat a Watermelon?" But anyway, I started. That's when I switched careers. So starting with 2007, I was doing my MFA in creative writing and teaching creative writing at the same time, and that's where, where my life changed. I always say I was making a third of the money I was making as an engineer, but I was three times happier. And now I've taught at all, basically almost all DMV universities except for UDC. I've taught at University of Maryland first, then at American University. And then at one time, I was teaching at American University, Georgetown University, and George Washington University at the same time. And now I've been teaching at American University and Johns Hopkins University, SAIS, which is the DC branch. And in the summer, I'll be back at Georgetown teaching contemporary Arab film in the summertime. And but mainly I'm teaching at the American University. That's been my home.
Oh, great. That's great. And it's just new, I mean, some new nuggets in your life that I didn't realize that you helped build those airports. And yeah, it's amazing. And as I so you've been shaping our lives both as in the infrastructure of the things that we use in the transportation and also now shaping our lives in culturally with the spoken word and also hosting the show that you have. But particularly today, what particularly want to focus on the spoken word, poetry, because this is National Poetry Month, as you know, and I wanted to highlight that. I wanted to highlight one of the voices we have here on WPFW, but in particular, who does spoken word. And the I wanted to go back to you had said that this poetry, literature, spoken word was really the love of your life. And I wanted to see what were the influences for you to do that in before before migrating also, but also when you migrated in the various places you went to.
And what were the influences in terms of
Yeah, the things that led you to see this as the journey in your life to deal with spoken word
Right.
and poetry or writing,
Right,
etc.
right. So first of all, there's a, as you know, Moisa, there's a rich tradition of poetry in Arab culture. Like, people of my generation, for example, Arabs of my generation grew up with their, parents reciting poetry off of the top of their heads. There's a, also I've written an article also about these slam poetry competitions, which I've learned recently that even in Southeast DC they do something similar. These are poetry competitions called zejel. They're not called zejel, of course, in Southeast, but my somebody who prepared my taxes informed me that he grew up watching those slam poetry competitions. If you want to read more about it, it's called Zejel on the Rocks. There's an article online that I wrote about that tradition. So you grow up being entertained by poetry. And my father, would recite poetry. Poetry was also used as a method of rebellion, meaning, I was introduced by my father, my cousins, my uncles, my relatives to these rebel poets that basically were in the courts of the sultans and the kings, but would kind of subvert that. A lot of times they were being paid to praise these rulers, but they were like actually making fun of them and taunting them. And I really admired that. And I was a bookworm since the age of like 7 or 8. I loved reading. And then when I switched from all Arabic schools to international schools that taught English at the age of 12, I discovered Western poetry, which to me was more accessible because it didn't have it wasn't burdened with all these rules, so I felt more freedom. And I tinkered with it even, at the early age, even in junior high, I tinkered with it. In high school, I tinkered with it. In college, my college were basically really not really the most conducive. If you're going to college in Saudi Arabia, there's no inspiration, there's no cultural stimulation. But when I came to the United States, I started to write poetry. I was getting published, a poem here and a poem there in small magazines and zines, etc., and writing short story here and there. And that's what that's how I came about to bring a set of work to this to the head of the creative writing department. Michael Collier, who's an amazing, who's a great poet and was the poet laureate of Maryland, when I took those poems to him and said, "I'd like to switch careers, and do you think I'm crazy if I, go from this thriving career to the to basically pursuing a creative writing MFA, and he Master's in Fine Arts, and he said, he read the stuff and he said, this, these poems and short stories have potential, and I will help you get enrolled in the University of Maryland." So that's how it came about. Poetry is in our blood. Even like if you look at people like my father, who discouraged me from pursuing literature or creative writing as a profession or as a scholarly pursuit. He's at the same time he did he always respected poetry. He always said, you know, poetry is important and literature is important, and he was a an avid reader. There was never a day where he wasn't reading something, and he memorized poems from by heart, dozens of poems that he would just sometimes he'd be driving and he would recite them. So he felt it was important, but he dissuaded me from that as a profession because of obvious obstacles then, that most writers and poets live in poverty. And in Lebanon, even though there was a lot of respect for poetry and literature, at the same time, parents generally would say, if you fail in the sciences, then you can pursue the liberal arts, but you should always pursue the sciences. And that's something that you find all over the Asian continent and in other places, and even in some pockets in the United States where, where that's the kind of mind set that people have.
Again, that's Zain El-Amin. He is the host of Share When I Nai on WPFW and the host and producer of that show. And that show airs on Wednesdays at 2 p.m. after Africa Now. And as you know, he's also, or maybe as you didn't know, he's also a spoken word artist, poet, and writer, professor, educator. Many things. And as we learned, an engineer as well, civil engineer. So that's, as you mentioned earlier, when you're talking about your life journey about the spoken word artist or the poet, as particularly in the culture and the when you're talking about the Sultan's court, with the people who made the stories, which was supposed to be praise singers or praise worshippers. It reminds me of also in the calypso tradition in the Caribbean, where the calypso singer, they're saying one thing but they're actually saying another thing in the song, criticizing the at the time when calypso was emerging, and criticizing the colonial government, and then of course, and later on after independence, you're critiquing also the governments of the day, and people, if you don't understand it properly, you think it's just entertainment, but there's actually hidden messages and messages. If you could talk about some of those examples, I don't know if in your work you deal with a
Of
lot of
course.
messages like that.
And I want to read you something, Louisa, that speaks directly to like the hidden messages that this is a something that I wrote in Barbados. I was in Barbados once, hosted by a friend. They're the people of Barbados are called Bajans, as you know. And this is a poem that really sort of makes fun of the British colonials that were there. And so it has a part of a song which is called The Stinging Bees. And the funny thing, Muiza, is that we would be there at night. I would be with this Bajan friend of mine, Russell, and we'd watch these Brits dance to this song and not know that it's actually about them.
That's very funny.
Like Jamie, the guy would be singing, "Jamie is a bee, Billy is a bee, and they're stinging everybody, stinging left, stinging right, stinging through morning through the night." And they would be dancing to it, and we'd be pointing like stinging, and we would be laughing our heads off because bee meant British,
I like
the
to. I would love to have been there with you to see that.
So and this song, this poem I wrote was when I was hosted by my friend Cindy, who both me and Russell had a crush on, but she had a boyfriend. And so I wrote the song that included also embedded in this not song, but rather poem that had two excerpts from a songs that we used to listen to at night when when we go out dancing. This is in my college years when I was visiting Barbados in summer break. And the other song that you'll hear in this poem is a song that was broadcast on the radio which was really about safe sex. The song went something like, "There ain't no love without your white glove. You think you're Michael Jackson, you go look for action. No, not tonight." And so I used these two songs within this poem, which was anti-colonial kind of a poem. Part of our subversion of British colonialism is that Russell was a champion windsurfer, and I was I didn't know windsurfing. I could barely stand for like a few minutes, and yet Russell taught me that I didn't have to know. We were basically, to be honest with you, scamming the British tourists. We would because I ran out of money and I needed to extend my stay, so I would be teaching windsurfing with Russell, even though I didn't know how to windsurf, but I would just like teach them on land and send them off, and they'd be falling left and right, and I would just give instructions from the beach without knowing, and I managed to make enough money to extend my stay. So this is basically a poem that's both a love poem about longing and also a need at the same time needling British colonialism, and it's titled "Bajan Rain." And I start with a quote from James Joyce from Ulysses that goes, "Her nocturnal predominance, her splendor when visible, her attraction when invisible." And the poem goes, "Even from here, the tide tugs at me, sets me swaying above the marble of the balcony and above the cliff's edge. Above the balcony and above the private cove that emptied for our morning surf and filled with our evening tide. That was the summer when we had cornflakes and cannabis in the morning and scammed the bees at noon. I taught them windsurfing with a far Rastafarian who taught me that I don't need to know how to surf on water to teach it on land. You see, Jamie is a bee, Billy is a bee, and they're stinging everybody, stinging left, stinging right, stinging morning through the night. We sent them out for hours, slapstick sailing, until we had enough for a fishball lunch, the gas home, and the gas back to the beach. In the afternoon, we sat on the balcony, stoned again, waiting for the Bajan rain, watched it darken our cove, dimple our sea, then drop its shimmering curtains all around our sheltered perch. Cindy came slinking by us in her batik wrap, home from a day of working as a mermaid for the Caribbean Submarine Company. We pretended to stare and smile out at Breezy Hollow while the hollow's thunder rumbled with our hunger. You see, you think you're Michael Jackson, you go look for action. No, not tonight. The evenings ended as always, Cindy swaying between the phosphorus and the fireflies and the lost stars until they all streaked into one. And I'm pulled down to the cove again to race the tide, transverse its jagged embrace before its daily drowning." So that's Bajan Rain.
Oh, thanks. You're going to be also part of a special program that's taking place on the 25th of April, which is for WPFW. It's the fund drive.
That's right.
It's not the fund, it's the actual celebration of the 40th anniversary,
48, yeah.
40th anniversary of celebration of WPFW,
You're
which would
right.
be at the Greenway Center, sorry, Martin's Crossroads, which is at in Greenbelt, Maryland, and
Right.
that's yeah, it's 77400 Greenway Center Drive in Greenbelt, Maryland. That's on April 25th. So you can talk a little bit about that program as well, since you're one of the headliners of the program.
Well, it's It's celebrating, our WPFW-FM has become more important than ever. And the reason why, always, when we have, we have fascism setting in and we have people resisting, and there's a lot of control over social media by the same oligarchs that are now shredding our social safety net. And in those cases, the forces of resistance, we do the opposite of what Michelle Obama told us. We actually go low when they go high, meaning we'd go low tech when they go high tech. And WPFW is, in essence, a low tech force of resistance, in the sense that it flies under the radar of censorship. It's not in the hands of these oligarchs to shadow ban us or censor us or block us, or so on, or use that material to persecute us. When you have a real public radio station like WPFW, you have freedom of speech, and you can grow an audience in a time of censorship, because we're not under the thumb of these oligarchs. And that's why this celebration is especially important on the 25th of April. And we're going to be reading poetry and talking about what this almost half century has meant for WPFW, and how we've evolved over the years.
Yeah, and another colleague of ours, Esther Everham, who hosts On the Ground on Fridays at 10 o'clock, will also be part of that.
That's right. That's right. Both of us will be
That
reading poetry.
celebration. Yeah, and then Navasha Adaya will be the main performer. Great event with awards and presentations and auction, etc. More
Yeah.
information is on our website, which is wpfwfm.org. Again, that's the 40th 48th anniversary celebration on 25th. That's
Yeah.
that's Friday, April 25th. Is that Friday? That's Friday, April 25th. Yeah, Friday, April 25th. Yeah, and a couple weeks from now. But
That's
somewhat, and as you mentioned,
at 7 p.m.
sorry, go ahead.
Is it the time is 7 p.m., right?
Yes, 7 p.m.
And the place is
The place is at Martin's Crosswinds in Greenbelt, Maryland. And more information about the tickets available on the website,
Okay.
WPFWFM.org. You're listening to a recent conversation that reflects on the role and tradition of a poet or spoken word artist in speaking truth to power, the influences of the poet, and more. The conversation is with Zain Al-Amin, who is the host and producer of Sha'anana, which airs on WPFW After Africa Now. And he's also a poet, spoken word artist, writer, and adjunct professor at American University. The music in the background is Maiden Voyage by Herbie Hancock, and we play that remembering his birthday, which is April 12, and commemorating Jazz Appreciation Month. You're listening to Africa Now on WPFW 89.3 FM in Washington, D.C., your jazz and justice station. Now back to the conversation. And as you're talking about the importance of WPFW today, and also the role of the spoken word artists and poets today, what are some of the things that you're focusing on, and the community and the poetry community?
Right. Obviously,
Focusing present time.
Right now I have the privilege of teaching in a course that we just were I'm doing I'm teaching it for the first time at American University, called Art and Activism and the Arab World. And What one thing of the proof of the importance of art and poetry right now is the fact that they are what's happening, as you know, Muiza. Most of what I've been reporting since the beginning of this genocide is about Gaza and what's happening. And anybody that doubts the effectiveness of poetry and art, if they think it's a secondary kind of weapon in the arsenal of people that are fighting for freedom, it's actually, you have to look at how many poets have been killed and writers have been killed over the years, especially Palestinian poets and writers like Ghassan Kanafani, who was killed by the Israelis in a letter bomb in Beirut, and most recently, of course, Rifat al-Arir, who was killed, you know, basically with they bombed his house and bombed him while he was taking shelter with family members, and destroyed the whole house. He had anticipated that. These are the things that we're tackling, and so this poetry and literature has become more important than ever. And also, poetry and art and literature are a way to subvert censorship, because we're dealing with idiots that are they have no knowledge of any of the arts, no knowledge of what a metaphor is or what a symbol is. So we can communicate freely with the people of conscience, and bypass these mentally stunted leaders that are, you know, as we call it in Arabic poetry, we're led these days, whether it is here in the United States or all over the Arab world, every single Arab leader has stood by the sideline and watched the Gazan children, women and men be massacred. That we say in Arabic, there's a famous song or a famous poem that says that we are being led by the heads of mules. So that's the importance right now of art and poetry.
Yeah, and I guess it's continuing that tradition of speaking truth to power, which you talked about earlier on at the beginning of our conversation, how the poets within the spoken word artists who were employed by the rulers, thinking that they would be the cheerleaders,
exactly,
of the system,
right.
are the ones who are going to actually trying to undercut the information flowing out of that system, and trying to tell the public what is the truth behind what is going on.
Uh-huh. Right, right.
And particularly as we're talking about today, what do you see? We see the challenges. What do you see also the opportunities of the current situation?
Well, the opportunities is there's no lack of material, you know, in terms of for us. I mean, we in terms of like, the opportunities right now is that we can add what artists are doing all over the world, and especially in the global south, which you and I call the global majority, what they're doing is artists, singers, and of all kinds, cultural workers have the opportunity to basically, first of all, form a line of defense for the activists that are taking risks, and also to communicate with each other in this language that bypasses the politicians that are only concerned with profit and power. So there's a lot of opportunities right now for us. And for those who think that we don't have an opportunity that you, if they think that they can hide and not be present, you know, I've heard it so many times. I support what you're doing. I'm disgusted by what's happening. I can't believe there's a Holocaust in our time, but I can't peek out because I'll get my head chopped off. And the reality is it's the opposite. If you don't go and find your community, if you don't go on these marches, which people, some people say they're useless, those marches are opportunities to network and build your community. If you don't have a network, they'll snatch you in the dark, right? But if you have a network, you have a support system. And in academia, we have the Heritage Foundation here in our backyard that created this Esther project, which doesn't care whether you're out in the street or you're in your office writing a thesis. It seeks out through AI certain keywords that would trigger it and would trigger the project and put you on a blacklist, which and basically the Heritage Foundation, remember that they're one of the creators of Project 2025. And so they're working closely with the Trump administration. So that's how they're pursuing people through this Project Esther. So I tell my fellow faculty members and all that, you know, if you hide and if you don't say anything, if you don't have, you know, weekly protests, if you don't form a response network of tenured professors that can protect others, less, more vulnerable adjunct professors and such, that's when you're most vulnerable. So that's the work before us right now, is to be out, to be present, to be visible, and to be straight in what our demands are and not water them down and not fall for the two-party system that manages to demolish every civil rights movement, every social movement, rather, you know, and especially the Democratic Party, which has been the most successful, even more successful than the Republican Party, in burying social movements, because what they do is more likely to be co-opted by the Democratic Party than by the Republican Party. Not that one is more evil than the other. They're both equally evil, and they work in a symbiotic way.
Zane, do you have any closing words or remarks before we end?
No, but I just want to say, you know, part of this celebration of WPFW, I want to say how much I appreciate, you know, my show and your show were placed next to each other. That was deliberate move by Katia Stitt, because we overlap in our struggles, and especially, you know, through North Africa, and we've shared programs, and we've shared, you know, when there's a film festival that addresses both regions, we've shared those. And I just want to say that, you know, to the audience, that, you know, always listen to us, to Mwiza first, from 1 to 2, and then to Shayonana show from 2 to 3 every Wednesday. And if you're a listener anywhere outside of the DMV area, you can always listen online on WPFWFM.org. And people can hear me recite my poetry at the event that's happening on Friday, April 25th, which is the 48th anniversary of WPFW. This will be happening at 7 p.m. at Martin's Crosswinds in Greenbelt, Maryland. There will be a whole program of poetry and speeches and music, etc.
And again, that's Zane El Amin. He is the host of Shayonana, which comes on every Wednesdays at 2 p.m. right here on WPFW. after Africa Now. Zane, again, thank you very much for being on the show.
Thank you, Moisa.
And again, Zane El Amine is, as I mentioned, the host of Sha'anana, but he's also a spoken word artist, poet, and writer, professor, and as we found out today, a civil engineer as well in his other life. Thanks again, Zane, for all the work you do.
Thank you.
WPFW presents Still We Rise, our 48th anniversary celebration on Friday, April 25th from 7 until 11 p.m. at Martin's Crosswinds in Greenbelt, Maryland. Entertainment will be provided by vocalist Navasha Dea and her trio, and WPFW programmers and poets Esther Iverum and Zain El Amin. The evening includes an award ceremony, dinner, and dancing to the music of DJ James Funk. That's Still We Rise, WPFW's 48th anniversary celebration. Details at WPFWFM.org.
Just been listening to a recent conversation with Zain El Amin, who is a poet, spoken word artist, writer, and adjunct professor at American University. And as you know, he is also host and producer of WPFW's show Sha'anana. The music in the background is Kurima by Chinoiso Marere. We continue commemorating National Poetry Month with poetry from our archives. Here is literary activist, short story writer, and poet Khadija Cisse, also known as Khadija George.
I start off this poem with a quote from Marcus Garvey Jr. "A people without the knowledge of their past history, origin, and culture is like a tree without roots." Here is Africa. Here is the West Indies. And all this here is England. I come from somewhere in between. This picture of the world is so huge that I'm not exactly sure where my place is on the map, in the world, even in my classroom. My real mum and dad say we're from someplace called Sierra Leone, which means mountain lion in Italian, named by a Portuguese explorer. As a ship sails into port, the mountain looks as though two lions are facing you. You look like a Jamaican. But don't we all look the same? Dark skin, thick hair, full lips, curved bums. I trace my family tree and it lands in Barbados. And what of England? Where I was born, raised and schooled. Which has taught me nothing of Africa, of the West Indies. That showed me a map of the world without me or my real mum and dad. Where do I come from? Africa? Barbados, England, all three.
That was literary activist, short story writer, and poet Khadija Cisse, also known as Khadija George. She was reading the poem "The Reality of the Atlas." And that was from our archives a few years ago. The music in the background and the music in the background of the poetry reading is Africano by Earth, Wind and Fire. The song appeared on the album That's the Way of the World by Earth, Wind and Fire, which was released on March 3rd, 1975, 50 years ago. We continue commemorating National Poetry Month with poetry from poet, writer, songwriter, educator, and actress Anna Mulago. The poem is entitled "Don't Give Up."
It's not over, long as you got breath. worship that we do that changes lives. Worship. Reverence. A form of worship that can dissolve hate, anger, sorrow. Worship. Reverence. Breathe. That is worship. As you breathe, let your light shine. See the rays and the colors vibrating into your mind and soul. Let your body radiate with the sun rays. Let your soul bust with the hues of yellow, blue, red, white, gray, pink, purple. Let the rainbow come in. There is a way of worship that can change the way we look at things, and the things we look at will change. It can change the way we think and change the way we be. It can change who we think we are and become what we are meant to be. Breathe. Of a higher level because we worship and reverence the beauty of nature. We embrace the gift of the present. We salute the past and move forward in the spirit of forgiveness, humility, abundance, joy, power, courage. We give reverence to the God of our ancestors, God of darkness and light, God of abundance, God of peace, God of gratefulness. Next to you and welcome them into this world with a smile. Tell them I see you, I feel you, I'm with you, I love you. Can you feel the wind blow? Did you say hello to the trees? Have you heard the melodies of nature? Did you smell the roses? Look up! The clouds in the sky are still sheltering you. Now close your eyes, take in the air, and breathe, sister. Breathe, brother. Worship, reverence, breathe. Worship. Know that the pain that you bear, this too shall pass. That trauma that you carry, that too shall pass. The disappointment in your tone, this too shall pass. Hard times ahead, this too shall pass. Sorrow in your eyes, this too shall pass. The gossip in their tongue, that too shall pass. That which does not serve you, that too shall pass. That which humiliates you, that too shall pass. Their wicked and evil minds, them too shall pass. Keep walking, smiling. cannot take you, where the grace of God cannot keep you. And with God, all is possible. Breathe. Worship. Breathe. Reverence. Breathe. Ashe. Ashe.
And that was our final segment commemorating National Poetry Month with the poem Don't Give Up by Ana Malago. Ana Malago is a poet, writer, songwriter, educator, and actress. The music in the background is African People by Christine Kamau, the play that's commemorating Jazz Appreciation Month. That's it for Africa Now for today. I'm your host, Muiza Mutale. Up next is Headline News, followed by Shanana Hussein Alameen, and that's followed by the Women's Collective Sophie's Parlor, which is followed by The Browder File with Tony Browder, which is followed by Black Agenda Radio with Margaret Kimberly, and that's followed by Kombi Lakai with Eugenia Charles looking at issues in Haiti. Check out Africa Now on Facebook and on X, formerly Twitter. That's at Africa Now Online. Also, Africa Now is archived on iTunes Podcast and on SoundCloud. Search under Africa Now Online on SoundCloud. That's Africa Now Online on SoundCloud. Thanks to Africa Now's executive producer and co-host, James Pope. And also thanks to our engineers, Michael Nicella and Kalia Chapman. And thanks to our research fellow volunteers, Chanda Kozer and Fernan Gonda, and the Africa World Now Project Collective of Dr. Tasmin Siddiqui, Dr. Keisha Khan Perry, Dr. Josh Myers, and Kurt Erdison. And thanks to the entire team here at WPFW and to you for joining us. Continue to support all the great programs on WPFW. We're going to leave you the closing song entitled Kanason by Amadou and Miriam, remembering Amadou Bagayoko, who recently joined the Ancestors on April 4. He was part of the musical duo Amadou and Miriam. May he rest in peace and power. Have a great day, have a great week, and stay safe.
WPFW News in Washington and WBAI in New York. I'm Sue Goodwin. President Trump's latest round of sweeping reciprocal tariffs went into effect just after midnight today, including a 104% import tax on China. Hours later, Beijing said it was hiking retaliatory duties on U.S. imports to 84% from 34%. Canada enacted a 25% levy on auto imports from the U.S. that do not comply with the 2020 U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement, and the European Union member states have voted to approve retaliatory tariffs on $23 billion in goods in response to Trump's 25% tariffs on imported steel and aluminum. Meanwhile, Trump has been saying that tariffs on foreign-made medications are coming soon, with the goal of bringing overseas manufacturing back to the United States. Experts say that such tariffs could result in higher prices and shortages of generic drugs. Pharmaceutical products were mostly exempt from the round of tariffs that went into effect today. In other news, a federal judge yesterday issued a preliminary injunction ordering the White House to restore full access to the Associated Press to report on presidential events. AP sued the Trump administration in February after the White House limited AP access to President Trump's events, the Oval Office, and Air Force One because the wire service continued to use the phrase Gulf of Mexico after Trump renamed the body of water the Gulf of America. In his ruling, United States District Judge Trevor McFadden, who was appointed by President Trump, said the First Amendment prohibits the government from punishing the news organization for the content of its speech. The judge gave the government a week to respond or appeal the order before it comes into force. In more legal news, the American Civil Liberties Union filed a lawsuit yesterday on behalf of two Venezuelan migrants who expect to be deported under the Alien Enemies Act and face possible removal to a Salvadoran prison. The suit is the first in the wake of a Supreme Court decision lifting a temporary restraining order from a lower court that had blocked the Trump administration from using the law to deport people. In a 5-4 decision on Monday, the Supreme Court decided that the Trump administration can resume deportations of alleged Venezuelan gang members under the Alien Enemies Act of 1798, but the court said detainees must be given due process to challenge their removal. At least 137 people have been deported by the Trump administration under the Alien Enemies Act. Many of the deportees do not have U.S. criminal records, an ICE official acknowledged in court documents. Some relatives of the deported migrants have said they believe that the deportees were mistakenly identified as gang members because of their tattoos. And in news from Gaza, health officials in Gaza say an Israeli airstrike has killed at least 29 Palestinians overnight, including children, as aid remains blocked since the beginning of March, resulting in tens of thousands at risk of health complications and malnutrition. The United Nations Secretary General has issued a stinging rebuke of Israel's blockade of the Gaza Strip, describing it as